Never have I seen anyone who understands building a pipeline better than my guest today from Puerto Rico, YPO member Ramon Rancho IV. Not only is Quique, as his many friends call him, known for his family business of fluid management, or rather selling pipe, he is the most amazing networker I have ever experienced. This is YPO 10-Minute Tips from the Top. I'm Kevin Daum, and each week I bring you insights from the world's top executives of YPO, all made possible with grants from Gazelle's Growth Institute, www.growthinstitute.com. YPO member Ramon Riancho IV knows how to make it flow. He is the leader of Indusa, one of the thriving international enterprises dedicated to fluid management solutions. In other words, he supplies pipe to big corporations like Fluor and Bechtel for industrial use all over Latin America. Based in Puerto Rico, Indusa's industry expertise dates back over 60 years ago. In 1990, Indusa became the premier provider for fluid management needs of mining, construction, chemical, pharmaceutical, and government segments all around Latin America and Caribbean markets. With its roots in Puerto Rico, the company has managed to establish a foothold across 16 countries, including Chile, Peru, Panama, Colombia, Costa Rica, Argentina, Ecuador, and Bolivia, among others. As the fourth-generation business owner, Ramon also managed to build and maintain offices in almost every country, if not city, in all of Latin America. Before joining the family business, Ramon attended the University of Puerto Rico Law School and then worked as a corporate attorney at McConnell Valdez before being named Regional Director for Legal and Public Affairs at Merck Corporation. Ramon, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
You didn't start as an entrepreneur. You were at Merck, right?
That's right, yes. I'm actually an attorney by trade. I was a practicing attorney, worked for the largest Hispanic law firm in the world. I was a corporate attorney there, about 155 attorneys. So I did a lot of bond structuring and corporate financing and a lot of hotel deals back in the 90s. After that, then I was hired by Merck, the pharmaceutical company, as originally the in-house attorney. We had a lot of manufacturing operations on the island in Puerto Rico, and I also managed the commercial aspect, which was a great segue. I was born a business person. I became an attorney. I wanted to practice as such, but I always knew that I didn't want to be an attorney. It was just in my blood to be an entrepreneur, and I just wanted to sort of segue.
So Merck was a good training ground to learn all the basics,
absolutely,
get the law out of the way. And at Merck, you ran public affairs, which today would be a challenging job.
Not only a challenge, I think it's more of a privilege when you think about it. A lot of people focus more on the issues about drug pricing and
Inversion.
That's right. And access to pharmaceuticals and to drugs. But there are other areas of the pharmaceutical industry that people don't focus on, which is everything they do in terms of research for HIV drugs to vaccination of children. So there's the beauty part of it as well that people aren't necessarily aware of. And it was truly a privilege to be part of that.
So what was the big turning point for you that said, okay, enough of the corporate world, I'm ready to go do this on my own?
There were different factors. I think there was a big opportunity in my family business to join. Because of my opportunities in traveling with Merck, I always in the back of my mind, every time I traveled, I would see that there was a particular need in a market where I thought we could make a fit for our company in the family. As I was being sort of developed and my career kept going on in Merck, I was being groomed to be a managing director. But then you have to segue into this nomadic role with my family, and I have three kids. So I decided that it was time to settle and move into the family business.
So Indusa is now focused on supplying materials, essentially liquid management. So I imagine this came from pharmaceuticals. They have to move a lot of liquids if they're making cough syrups or however they're processing. And so that's the space that you found.
In Puerto Rico particularly, Puerto Rico has one of the largest platforms or footprints of pharmaceutical manufacturing in the world. At one point, maybe some 6-7 years ago, actually like 30% of the global manufacture of pharmaceuticals came from Puerto Rico, which was like 9 out of the top 10 best-selling drugs in the U.S.
Now, that's a little bit of the same issue that kind of drove them into their financial issues.
Absolutely.
Right?
That's part of the issue, just having one industry, and it was mostly based out of tax incentives. Again, not to say that that's not a good model to have, but you need a more structured economy. And Puerto Rico has two issues. One is the debt issue, which is more of a government issue, and then you have the public management issue. So there's really two.
Now, we've solved the debt issue temporarily, right?
It's not really solved. What they've done is they've created a structure so that we have access to a process so that we can stream through it. Because Puerto Rico is not a state, we cannot declare bankruptcy. So it was going to be hard for Puerto Rico to default on its debt. The way I say it, it's, look, Puerto Rico is not broke. The government is. There's business there. There's a lot of good business, strong companies.
Yeah, how does that impact you as a company? What are the problems it creates for you as a company in Puerto Rico? And are there any benefits to the problem?
Absolutely, there are both. The first, I would say, it's uncertainty. When there's uncertainty in the market, a lot of projects get stopped, and my business has to do a lot with construction jobs. So especially in pharmaceuticals or large-scale power plants, and there hasn't been large-scale investment in the last years. Puerto Rico now has been the ninth consecutive year of a recession. The other alarming thing is you're losing a lot of talent. Puerto Rico used to have the highest net per capita ratio of engineers. We're now the net largest exporter of engineers.
Wow.
So it's troubling in that sense. I think in the longer term, we're going to have some issues in demographics because we've lost so much talent. But in the end, there's still a lot of opportunity as some prices have gone down in terms of property. There's still a lot of innovation going on. There's still a lot of highly skilled labor, even though there are some hurdles. I think ultimately now with the new oversight board, that will take care of a little bit of the uncertainty in the market. And I think it's a good place to do business right now.
I find it quite fascinating, at least the way that the media portrays it. Here we are, and you're looking at two islands that are essentially within the same block, right? And all of the attention and excitement is focused on Cuba, which we don't really have a financial stake in. And then not so far away is Puerto Rico, which for all intents and purposes, same weather, same climate, people that are already legal. And why is there not the same industry focus on wanting to take Puerto Rico and make more out of it that there is on Cuba?
That's a great question to ask. And personally, being half Cuban, because my mom is Cuban, it's sort of cool to talk about Cuba right now. And people still don't understand the fact that there's an embargo with Cuba. Although they have started diplomatic relationships, there's still a law, the Helms-Burton Act, that prohibits companies like mine from doing business in Cuba. Although there has been some loosening of the reins there, the fact remains that the Spanish companies, Canadian companies, German companies are already there. Whereas U.S. companies are in Puerto Rico. You have 4 million Puerto Ricans there that are U.S. citizens where people can travel to. So the tourism industry should be a good target for American companies to do more business in Puerto Rico. I think, again, it might be more of a matter of how we spin Puerto Rico to the world. And we have to sort of regroup ourselves and come back. They did a great campaign last year. The weather was so bad in Chicago at one point, it was like minus 20 or something for like a week.
You know what they call that in Chicago?
The regular
normal,
day.
Normal, yeah.
Exactly, a regular day. And there was a great campaign where they would leave in the doorsteps of houses all over Chicago suburbs a little container with salt and sand from Puerto Rico. Actually, we have some salt mines in Puerto Rico right next to a beautiful beach with one of the bioluminescent bays. And they said, here's some salt, use it to clean out your doorway, and you can actually take some of our sand and come down to the beach. And
yeah,
it was great.
They had that just about right. It should have been salt, lime, and tequila, and then exactly. Then it would have been...
Salt, lime, and rum.
Salt, lime, and rum,
that's right.
Right. Okay, Ramon, it's time for our rapid-fire questions. What is your favorite question to ask when you meet someone new?
I generally ask two questions. What's their favorite food and their favorite place?
Name three of your personal core values.
Genuine, driven, and passionate.
Who has had the greatest impact on you as a leader?
Definitely my children.
What are you learning from your kids?
You know, I started so young at 18, and you know, now that I've been married for 27 years and I take pride in all their accomplishments, they have shaped me into who I am. If I look upwards, certainly I have a lot of people that I admire, like the founding fathers and whatnot, but really the people who have shaped me into who I am are my kids.
What is your favorite business book?
I don't really like business books that much. I find them clever. There's one, though, that I could say particularly I enjoyed because it has a little bit of a parallel with my industry. It's called The Leadership Pipeline.
You realize you're talking to a business book writer.
Yeah.
What are you reading right now?
I'm always reading a bunch of books simultaneously. Right now, I'm reading a book called Danubia. Danubia is the history of the Habsburg family. They ruled Europe for basically 700 years. Also, I'm always reading something by Christopher Moore. I find him to be an excellent writer.
What is the one leadership trait that brings success?
An absolute drive to pursue excellence.
What is the one leadership trait that kills success?
Complacency.
Name one daily behavior that will help a leader grow.
I think you have to read something useful every day.
Name one trait that makes an employee valuable.
Loyalty.
What's your strangest daily habit?
Listening to songs on repeat.
over and over again. Do you have a record for how many times you've listened to a particular song?
Actually, I read the Einstein biography by David McCullough in just listening to Yellow by Coldplay on repeat, and I read it in three flights.
What's the best way to show employees appreciation?
Gestures of appreciation and value, more than just monetary compensation.
Well, we certainly appreciate your time today, Ramon. Thank you so much for coming.
It's been my pleasure. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for joining us today, and thanks to Gazelle's Growth Institute for underwriting this program. Learn more at growthinstitute.com. Join me next week when I'll be interviewing YPO member Rafiq Jumaboy, chairman of Orkney Holdings. He'll share with us the amazing story of how a family business disintegrated and how he rose from the ashes. I'm Kevin Daum, and you're listening to the YPO 10-Minute Tips from the Top. To learn more about YPO, visit www.ypo.org.